Ephesians chapter 4, and we'll continue our study through Ephesians here. And we kind of went last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess now, we talked about the first verse, and we had kind of take a break from Ephesians for a while. And so we talked about the first verse last week and talking about walking in a manner worthy of our calling. And, you know, Paul emphasizing being a prisoner of the Lord, even though he was in chains or a prisoner at the time when he wrote this epistle. But he's talking about being walking in a manner worthy of which you have been called. And so we're going to continue on to the next verse, and he's adding in here, he is associating these next few verses with walking in a manner according to which we've been called. So someone just want to start out and read verse 2 of Hebrews 4. Ephesians 4.
With all humility and gentleness, patience, showing forbearance to one another in love.
Okay, so this word for with here means with, among, or after. And so the way that Paul is tying this here is that when we're walking in a manner worthy of our calling, it doesn't exclude humility, gentleness, patience, or forbearance in love. Okay, so you can't walk according, we can't walk according to the manner worthy of our calling without those. Aside from those things, we can't walk that way. And we'll get to next week talking about being diligent and preserving the unity of the Spirit. But we're going to go and talk individually about these characteristics here. So the first one is humility. And the Greek word for humility, it means humility or like lowliness of mind. Okay, and it's used, I think, 8 times in the New Testament, this Greek word is. And one time it's used in Philippians 2. Let's turn over to Philippians chapter 2, just the next book forward here. Philippians 2, verse 3.
Doing nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regarding one another as more important than yourselves.
Okay, so Paul is saying, it talks about here, the emphasis is we're not being selfish when we have humility or when we're humble. We're not being selfish. We are, others are more important than ourselves. You know, we're regarding one another more important than ourselves. We're trying to help them. And that goes along, I mean, as we'll get a little bit later, of bearing one another's burdens and so on. But it has to start with humility. I mean, no one, a king, if he's not humble, isn't going to serve the peasant. He's not going to bear the burdens of the peasant. And so, you know, there might be some king that, obviously Jesus is the only one. But or as far as earthly kings, you might say that, you know, maybe sometimes kings will be humble. But for the most part, those in power, those higher, are not humble. They're not going to bear the burdens of those who are lower than them. Okay, and so that's what Paul is the opposite. What Paul is saying here is that we are regarding people more important than ourselves. You know, it starts with humility, though. You have to be humble in order for that to be accomplished. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And someone read verse 8 and 9.
To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing.
Okay, so Peter's saying there, again, being harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Okay. And again, all of those go along with those. And it's kind of like the fruit of the Spirit. There's not one fruit, or there's not multiple fruits of the Spirit, but the fruit of the Spirit is all of them together. And so it's similar here. You know, you're not going to be brotherly if you're not first humble. You're not going to be sympathetic if you're not humble. You're not going to be kind if you're not humble. Okay, and yeah, you could say that there's random acts of kindness, and that's another thing. Practicing something and doing something once in a while is two different things. You know, just because someone may say a prayer doesn't mean that they have a good prayer life. Just because someone might thank God for something doesn't mean that they always have thankfulness to God. Just because they might recognize that Jesus is King doesn't mean that they actually believe that and submit to Him in their heart. And so doing it one time does not make someone that type of person. So just because someone might have a random act of kindness doesn't make them kind. It doesn't make their character kind. Just because someone might be humbled once in a while doesn't mean that they're humble in spirit. So, again, it all works together. It all is intertwined there. You can't be sympathetic. You can't be in harmony if someone's not humble either.
It kind of strikes me as solidarity, right? He's teaching and basically saying without respect and love and that we're all in the same boat together, we're going to be at odds. Mm-hmm. And so he's teaching that loving kindness, that being humble because we're all under the same danger, same right. threat. Mm-hmm.
And we'll get this in a second too, but that does go along with bearing one another's burdens too, and we'll get that in a little bit later today. But that's kind of how God designed that though. I mean, it's not meant to Christianity and us being called out is not something that we can do individually. We obviously have to have the help of the Holy Spirit. But God designed it in a way to have help from other saints too, and have encouragement from other saints. And that's why He set up things the way He did, to have encouragement from them. And because it just going out in the cave and just kind of sitting there isn't gonna, you know. Then you start thinking like Elijah, you know. And sometimes when you straighten out and thinking, no, there's a lot of other people who, you know. And probably Elijah would be a lot better than the guy just in the cave, because the guy in the cave is just sitting there feeling sorry for himself, which we'll get into that in just a second here. Go ahead, Ken.
Another thing, too, maybe you watch a person when nobody else is watching, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, people react and depend upon people watching them. But when they're out doing something at home and nobody's watching, that's kind of where they are.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why reality TV isn't really reality. You know, it's they're really acting, even though they don't have a script. They're really acting. It's not really reality, but that's what they do when no one's looking. And so God sees all the time, and that's the deal. That's why, you know, it doesn't really you know, no one saw the employee kind of, you know, slack off for half an hour, an hour, but God sees that, and that's a part of the character, you know. And so that's again, taking a break isn't wrong, but when the idea is when you're cheating someone out of it, that's a little different story there too. That shows the character. So just turn a couple more chapters forward to 1 Peter chapter 5. And Paul or Peter here is in the context, he's talking about elders, and he's talking about the order of how they're not lording it over. And then he talks about younger men here in verse 5. But so go ahead and read verse 5, chapter 5, verse 5 and 6, please.
Humble yourself.
Yeah. So he talks about elders, and first he's referencing elders. You know, you're not lording it over people, in verse 3. But younger men, be subject to your elders, and all be humble. And so the elder or the younger man, it doesn't matter, and it could be the same thing with older and younger women too. But the point is that with the humble spirit or humble in heart, and not being proud, it's not going to matter who, you know, people. We can teach each other and help each other out. But when people start, you know, and I think Paul even advises Timothy with this, or on the other way around, people can think, well, they're just kind of old and outdated. They really don't know anything, and they disrespect, and they don't really learn from older people either. And so that's where it comes to being humble in heart, is that if we're humble in heart, we're going to do what's right because it's right, not because the younger man is teaching the older man or the older man is teaching the younger man. That's not going to be an issue because we're going to be humble. And the same thing with the older women, younger women. I know it doesn't specifically say women and women here, but that applies to them as well. Okay, and so when he says there, verse 5, at the end of verse 5, because God is opposed to the proud, gives grace to the humble. You know, so you act in, with humility. This is another, both these verses here that we just read, the word for humility there is the same Greek word in Ephesians 4 that we have been talking about here. But they are humility towards one another, because God's opposed to the proud. I mean, the proud doesn't want to, no, I'm not gonna learn from you, because I know it all, whether that person's older or whether that person's younger. And that happens both ways. You know, the younger kid a lot of times thinks the parent's stupid. You know, the parent doesn't know anything. Or the same thing the other way around. Oh, that guy's just too young. He doesn't have life experience or whatever. And that can be true both ways to a certain extent. But the proud person is going to emphasize that, and they're not going to learn from somebody. But the humble person is going to see the evidence and examine the evidence, and then they're going to make the conclusion based on what God says versus whether or not it's older or younger. And that's what Peter is saying here. So God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And so humble yourselves, in verse 6, under the mighty hand of God, and then he will exalt you at the proper time. See, it's not us exalting ourselves. And God will exalt us. You know, it's us being humble so that God will exalt us. Now, with that said, so that like I mentioned, that this word is used 8 times in the New Testament, and 6 times it's used positive. And now we're going to look at the 2 times that it's used in a negative sense here, and kind of see where it is. And they're both in Colossians 2. If we turn over to Colossians chapter 2, as just like I kind of talked about in the song this morning, yeah, Satan is the father of the world, but God is the father of, this is our father's world, and God is still in control. And so both sides are true, and so it is true that we need to humble ourselves, but this word, without any other word really dictating, like sometimes when you have a Greek word, like for we'll just use the word run. Okay, the Greek word we'll say for run. Okay, so the Greek word for run means to run, and it means to do this. But if you were to put the word not in front of it, then it would mean not run. Okay, so they add another Greek word to clarify the context. And so in this case here, they might make 2 words and make it into one, to make it into a different word. And we do that with our English language too, but it comes from 2 different words or whatever. But in these cases here in chapter 2 of Colossians, when it's talking about it, there's the context does dictate the way it's used, but there's not really another word that's added to this Greek word for humility to change the meaning any. And so the context is really dictating what it is. And so in verse 18 is one of these time. So chapter 2 of Colossians, verse 18. Okay, so there's a few things to talk about in that verse, but we're going to emphasize. So the word for self-abasement, what does abasement mean? Does anybody know?
Like the depravity of mind.
Yeah. What's the under your house? Yeah. In some ways, though, I mean, I wonder if that's what it came from, because that's what that word means, is you're actually reducing yourself, lower. Okay, abasement means that. So you're lowering yourself. Now, the way that Paul used this here, that word self-abasement is the word that we're talking about that means humility or lowliness of mind. Well, in the context that Paul is saying, and you really got to kind of think about it a little bit, but this is the person, what I kind of picture this person as, is that they are dwelling on the humility in that. Not that it's in a good way. I mean, yeah, we want to humble ourselves. So it is true. It's a true statement. We have to humble ourselves. But this person that Paul is talking against here is one who is delighting in that. Well, you know, I'm almost better than you because I'm humble. That's what they're doing. I'm really humble here. And in some cases, so we'll keep reading here. Let's keep reading. I'll make this point again here. Verse 20, it says, if then, and I'll read a few verses here to kind of get the context. If then you died with Christ to the elementary principles of the world, why, as if you were living in the world, do you submit yourself to decrees such as, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, which all refer to things destined to perish with using, in accordance with the commandments and teachings of men? These are matters which have, to be sure, the appearance of wisdom, and in self-made religion, and self-abasement, and severe treatment of the body, but are no value against fleshly indulgence. Okay, so the word self-abasement there again is the word for humility, or the word we're talking about. And so what he's saying there is that these people here are, and this verse is used usually when it's used incorrectly. I've seen it start at verse 21 and being quoted. Don't handle, don't taste, don't touch. And the time I've seen it used is people trying to make arguments against using an instrument like a piano or something. But if you read the context, Paul is actually saying, why are you submitting yourself to all these rules? All these don't handle, don't taste, don't touch, and it probably wasn't an instrumental issue in the first century. It was probably more like eating meat issue or doing stuff, you know, because the Jews were big on what defiled the person. You know, they ate with unclean hands, it defiles a person. And that's what Jesus said. Nothing happens going into somebody, doesn't defile them, but what comes out of the mouth defiles that person, because that's what comes from the heart. And so what he's saying here is that it's kind of these people that he's hitting here is that they're like, man, they're focused on the humility, which I'm not saying we don't want to be humble. I'm not saying that. And that is true, we need to be humble. But these people are taking it too far, and they're delighting in it. They're delighting, oh man, I'm so humble, man. I don't have fancy cars. I don't have a fancy house. I have clothes with holes in them. I'm just humble. I'm just relying on the Lord to get me through, or whatever. Or they are a good example. And I looked at it, and I'll see if I can see the. I have it pulled up here again. And the exact word, but in Jerusalem they have the path, so here's what it's the Via Della Rosa. And what that is, it's Latin for sorrowful way, and what it does is they walk a supposed path where Jesus walked from where when he was convicted to where he went to the cross and packed his, and carried his cross. And so what they do, the Catholics, it's a Catholic tradition, that they'll walk that path every Friday. And so they will, And they might emphasize it more around Easter, I think, but some of the stuff I read is that at least some people walk that path. And what they're doing is that they're walking the path and they're delighting in the suffering that Jesus did in almost in a sorrowful way. I mean, that's what the Latin word means, a sorrowful way. And they're delighting in the suffering and the humility and the self-abasement in that, that it makes them, that they're good because of delighting in the suffering. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have joy in suffering, but they're purposely doing that to themselves to delight in that. Yes, right, sorry.
Virtue signaling is a modern-day term for kind of what's being described, right, in that the left basically says, well, look at me, I'm joining in because these people have suffered horribly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm with them, and you know, I'm going to suffer with them, and so on. And then it's grandiose.
Okay.
Yeah, grandstanding, grandiose.
Okay.
Look at me, I'm special because I'm suffering.
Right, yeah.
I'm suffering with them, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the deal, is that they're delighting in the humility, okay? And so that's what, like eight times this word is used, and six times it's used actually in a good way, but these two times here, Paul is hitting that because what they're doing is they're delighting in that and emphasizing that to get special praise. It's almost like it's a little bit like the guy who prays in public and he's praying to be heard. You know, like Jesus talks about the Pharisee, that he prays in public and he prays to be heard, and his reward is what he has there, because people see how their long prayers are and how good they are. And so it's a little bit different form of that, that, man, I'm just suffering so much, and bringing attention to the suffering, man, you know, I'm just suffering a lot. And people, we need to help each other out when we're suffering. And it's good for us to bear one another's burden. I mean, we can't bear each other's burdens if we don't let each other know what we're going through sometimes. So there is part in doing that, but that can go too far too. And so we have to be careful in how that is we're humble and we need to have, you know, to help people, but we also have to not delight in our suffering too. You know, I mean, that's kind of what Paul is saying, what these guys are doing. They're delighting in it, you know, and really what it does, it doesn't, all that does in verse 23, at the end it says, but they are of no value against fleshly indulgence. It's almost like, man, if I'm suffering, if I'm making myself suffer, if I'm making, you know, myself, if I'm treating my body severely, like making it suffer, then I'm not going to indulge in fleshly things. But it doesn't make you overcome that. You're not going to overcome it by making, I'm going to starve myself so I overcome hunger. And that doesn't make you overcome hunger. I mean, there's a wise way to overcome food, I should say. You know, I'm going to starve myself to make myself overcome food. I mean, our God designed our bodies to have food. But there's other ways for us to not let food be our master. But starving ourselves is not going to be a way to do it. And I know that's maybe not as deep of a meaning that Paul is saying here, but that's kind of an example here, is that it doesn't help against fleshly indulgence just to severely, purposely bring yourself down for the purpose of glorifying yourself, so to speak. Because really you're indulging in a fleshly desire in honor and glory from other people instead of God. And so that's what he's hitting. So proper humility is important. And that's why it should be said. It's proper humility, not humility to be recognized.
Doth protest too loudly.
Yeah. Right. Right, yeah. So that it's one thing to share with somebody, but it's another thing to get up on a box and with a microphone and spread it too, you know.
I like the sandwich board.
The what?
Sandwich board. Walk around, that's what they call it, it goes up your shoulders.
And, oh yeah.
And this cup.
Oh, okay, yeah. Any more comments on humility? Okay, so go back to Ephesians 4. And the next one then is gentleness. And so this Greek word, you know, it's straightforward, translated correctly, gentleness. Okay, so it's not something that you know, we all kind of understand what gentleness can be. But the scripture uses it in the two verses we're going to look at, and when it uses this word, sometimes it's translated considerate or gentle. And the idea is if we're gentle with someone, we're considerate. You know, so if someone's learning something or someone's having trouble with something, if we're gentle with them, they're going to be more receptive to hearing what we're going to say or to help us helping them through that. And we'll get to it in a second, but there is a time for tough love, and we'll get to that in a second. But first, what's gentle mean? So turn to Titus. Titus 3. One of those small books again. Titus chapter 3. And so we will... just for context, I guess, kind of read 1 through 2, please, of Titus chapter 3.
Verses 1 and 2?
Yes, please.
Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be uncontentious, gentle, showing every consideration for all men.
Okay, so... this word for consideration here is the word that it is translated gentleness. Okay, and it's kind of like yeah, gentle is in there. I believe that's the right word. Let me just make sure here a second. Yes, it's the word consideration is actually translated. The word gentle is in there. But showing consideration is actually the Greek word, the same Greek word in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2, that's translated gentleness. Okay, and so we're gentle, but we're considerate. And so if somebody is struggling with something or somebody needs help with something, gentleness is being considerate of how you can help them do that. You're considerate about what their needs are or whatever it is. You're considerate in how they might turn them off. And an example, I guess, could be if I'm, let's say I'm studying with someone and they're not a Christian and their families are not in heaven. It would probably be pretty inconsiderate of me just to say, well, your family's in hell. Do you want to go there? If you don't want to go there, then here's that. That'd be kind of inconsiderate.
It's the shortest route, but you're right.
Right.
Your message isn't going to get received well.
Right. And so, but so the deal is there is that, I mean, that can be true. And if they flat out ask the deal, so after studying, they say, oh, so is my family there? And I mean, I'm not saying there's not a time to gently say something, but I mean, if you're just going to shortly come out and say your family's in hell, what are you going to do about it? That's not going to be very considerate for them. They're going to need something, and that's not considerate. That's not handling it gently. And that kind of goes with the next passage that we're going to go to in 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, and Peter kind of talks about this. Uses this word in the context of preaching the gospel or giving a defense. So verse 15 of 1 Peter chapter 3. Okay, so... The word gentleness there is the word we're looking at again. And so he's saying, sanctify Christ, but ready to give a defense, but with gentleness. Okay, so there is a way to handle it. Now, we're going to get into the tough love part here in a second, but there, on the one hand, and this is why Christianity is not a set of rules on how a guidebook, so, I mean, it is a guidebook, but like, okay, you handle every situation this particular way, and there's no exceptions to that. It's not a law. So there are certain situations you handle with gentleness, And there are times, because you could look at Jesus and you could say, well, there's times when he wasn't gentle. And that's true. There was times that Jesus showed tough love. And there was time because there was times for great rebuke. And probably, it probably wasn't when Jesus was answering there. I think we get the idea sometimes Jesus just answered kind of like in a monotone, soft voice and everything. There's probably a lot of high voice and maybe some yelling that he was doing there at times. And that wasn't wrong of him to do that. So there was times when he had to be tough. But on this particular topic here, we also have to look at how we are to be gentle first and how we are to be gentle with it. And if there's no response and if people are battling against us and speaking against, then there's a little bit of time for tough love. But focusing on gentleness here. Yeah, you're right.
And there are times when he was calm and loving and kind and gentle when that was called for. But he rose to the occasion when he defended the truth. And that was, it's one of the best. It's like a low-budget movie, but it's really done well. And the actor, I think, embodied Christ, as opposed to how they portray him in other films where he's just kind of like a lamb. That's all he is.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's kind of... You know, Kyle will probably get into this next week. Hebrews 13 talks about Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. You know, so God is both gentle and just, and has wrath for those. He's a consuming fire. You know, and you can see examples of both in Old and New Testament. I mean, there's times when God, you know, when there was great wrath, and there's times when we think, man, that was kind of short fused, but we also don't know a lot of the context. We don't, you know, it looks, well, it's only like 3 or 4 verses in our Bibles, but it spans over a few years or multiple, you know, maybe 10 years or 20 years or something that he gave people time, and then he killed them, or however it was, it rebuked them. And so Jesus, you know, is that example. I think there's times when, because in the context too, you know, when we look in the scripture, when we're in the text, sometimes we're like, well, how come he answered? It seems like he answers this kinder, if you will, than he answers questions over here. But when he's talking to the Pharisees, and he can tell that they're trying to trap him and they're battling against him, so he's not going to answer them in just this kind, gentle way. But there's other people that are coming asking him, and he's like, and you can maybe see a little bit more compassionate, if you will, in the text just by reading it, even though we can't see the tone. That doesn't mean that Jesus is wrong either way. It means that he had to deal with some of those people, and they were constantly rebuking him and constantly against him, and he was battling against them. There was a time for that tough, but there was also time when people were actually honestly asking the questions, and he was ready to give the answer in gentleness.
Himself publicly praised. One was the widow that was impoverished and very poor and gave a small pittance, and he said that her contribution was far greater than the richest man's contribution. And the other one was the centurion in the marketplace, because he understood the Old Testament God, and they were peers, they were cut from the same cloth, kind of, in that they understood each other's serious understanding of the reality of this world, right? And they were men's men, that he understood that was someone who understood his job, one-man army, essentially. Christ was a one-man army. This is a centurion, who's another military-minded person. So the spiritual struggle, that war, that thing that most people can't see, they understood each other. They were peers, I guess, in a way. He's still God, right? But he praised them, letting everybody know the marketplace. Faith was strong.
Yeah, he recognized the power that Jesus had. He recognized Jesus as king, and he knew that if who he was, he had the power just to say to that his servant be healed, and he could do it. You know, he understood authority well there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's the one meme that says, if anyone asks you what would Jesus do, remind them that flipping over tables and chasing people mm-hmm. with a whip is within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And so the idea there is that the loving, and Jesus did that out of love too. But the false idea narrative of love that people have today is that you tolerate everything, and that's not the case. Very few times the case, but right, and there is the word we're going to look at, the patience, like we'll look at that in a second here, but that's kind of it can be translated tolerating, but in the sense of you're patient with the person, you're not tolerating wickedness, you're patient allowing them to grow. But we'll get that in a second here though. So on the one hand, we need to be gentle and considerate, and this is both these things that we were looking at here. Kind of reference a little bit preaching the gospel, but in the context we're looking at in Ephesians especially, is referencing within the church here. So we are being gentle with each other, with other saints. And so if we're gentle with, in order to lead people, if you will, or to show them and help them become Christians, if we're gentle there, we also have to continue to be gentle in their growth too. But then again, on the other hand too, just like there's opposite ways of humility. I mean, there's true humility and being humble, but there also can be taking it too far. But on the other hand here, there needs to be tough love at times. Okay, and it turned to, now that I told Marvin, I gave him the deal, we're going to go outside those little lines now. Matthew chapter 18, just one time. One time. First book of the New Testament, Matthew 18. I marked out the passages and then I forgot about that I had this one outside of that passage marking. But Matthew 18, and I will say here too, even in this context, you still see gentleness leading up here. But it also, gentleness, in order to have gentleness for those who reject it, there has to be further carried out, further action carried out. So in verse 15 of chapter 18, 15 through 20, please.
If your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every fact may be confirmed. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall have been bound in heaven, and whatever you lose on earth shall have been loosed in heaven. Again I say to you that if two of you agree on earth about anything that they may ask,
okay, so that all that is in the context there. A lot of people use verse 19 and 20, or verse 20 is a little bit different as the idea of assembly, but really what he's talking about there is that first off, if your brother sins, rebuke him in private, you see that gentleness there still, okay? And if he doesn't listen to you, or if he listens to you, one, your brother, but if he doesn't, you take two or three more. And there's still that gentleness there still. And then if he refuses that, you tell the church, I still think that's still in gentleness, but there's still, being gentle does not mean you don't take disciplinary action. Okay? Because you could be not gentle in how you do it. You could be harsh in how you do it. And not do it correctly, and you can be harsh in rebuking a brother, you can be harsh in bringing him before the congregation, because And that could have the opposite effect. But he's saying here, but even with that, there still is disciplinary action. And so eventually that one is treated like a tax gatherer, a Gentile, and obviously if we're spiritual Jews, I mean, they would be treated as a spiritual Gentile. They're cast away, and granted, this is, I mean, if I hate the word to use the word excommunication, but that's kind of what it is. I mean, but the idea that excommunication the Catholics do is how the Pope decides, or whatever the cardinal, whatever, and they decide who it is. And this is not the picture of that. Okay, this is a picture of actually trying to win somebody and get them on right, and that's the purpose of this. But if they don't, we talked a little bit about gangrene in one of the messages we talked to Badlands. If you don't take care of the gangrene spreads. Okay, if you don't take care of the cancer spreads, or the rottenness of fruit. If you have a bowl of fruit and one's starting to get rotten, it's going to spread to the other fruit in the bowl. If you don't get rid of that one fruit that's rotten, and so that's what he's talking about here. And so when he goes on talking about binding. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loose in heaven. And the reason that he's saying that there, and this kind of goes back to a little bit maybe to the humility, okay? Because in a mindset of, we need to be humbled, but also, and it is true that we shouldn't think highly of ourselves, but it's also true that we shouldn't lower ourselves, like self-abasement, like he's saying. Lower ourselves lower than what God actually says. Okay? And so, because God has a standard for us, and God says we're this certain way. So if we lower ourselves, we're just sulking in our worthlessness, is what it is. And that's not a true humility. That's not a good humility. Okay? And so, and part of this here is that we have to understand the authority that we as a body in the name of Christ have. And that's what he's saying here is that in verse 20 there, whether two or three gather in my name, I am in their midst. So when you're dealing with the person that is rotten, if you will, and you're excommunicating them or disfellowshipping them is probably a better word for that. If it's on biblical lines, Christ is with us there. And it's not that we are making a judgment based on what we think. We're making a judgment based on what the Bible says. And that's what he's doing. So we can't think of, well, because you have a lot of the talking today, I mean, with love, oh, love everybody. Well, don't judge the person. I mean, if they want to love if that guy wants to love another guy, don't be judging him. Okay? Well, we also have to know that we have authority in that case, because that goes against the Scripture. So if that were to happen, that would be a case where we have to deal with that. And Christ is with us. If we handle that properly, Christ is with us. Because there is a time when that rotten fruit has to be taken out of the bowl. Or that gangrene has to be taken care of. And so that's what he's saying there, is that, whatever we agree about, if I say to you two or three in verse 19, two of you agree with any on earth about anything that they may ask, it shall be done for them by my Father who is in heaven. And if two or three are gathered in my name, I am in their midst. Now we need to not think less of ourselves, because God tasked us with that authority, and not with necessarily authority, but with that charge. We're dealing with that, okay? And granted, there still is gentleness going on while dealing with that. It doesn't exclude, I mean, we think of disfellowshipping someone, and we think, well, that's not gentle. Well, there still is gentleness that goes on with that, okay? And that's what he's saying there, is that we have that, not only that, the authority isn't the biggest part there, we have that job to do. Because if we don't do that, then that's going to come back on us if we don't stand up and speak out against what's wrong. That's coming back on us. It's not just coming on the person that's doing the wrong. That's going to come back on us for not speaking up too. And so a gentleness, all that is done in gentleness, But we are considerate and trying to, hey, how can we help the person? How can we help the person overcome this? And that is being considerate and gentle and dealing with that right.
Kirk, I think one parable that Jesus had, it wasn't even a parable, I guess it was a reality, when he talked about the lady, the woman that had been kind of not really have a good reputation, and the Pharisees brought her to Jesus, and he said, well, whoever has a sin, cast the first stone. You know, they want to, and then Jesus sat there a little while, and then he said, go and sin no more. He still didn't want to sin, but he done it pretty gentle there,
right?
And convicted everybody, kind of, So.
Right.
But and that maybe don't apply all the way here, but it still shows what his purpose was, and he wanted her not to sin anymore.
Right.
But he wanted her. But he was gentle, and he showed everybody a little bit about what was going on there.
Right. And they were purposely bringing her to him to test him. I think it says there.
Yeah.
And so their heart in doing that wasn't to help her out; it was to make a point, use her for a point. And so that's probably why he said a lot of that. Who could cast the first stone if you don't have sin?
Yeah.
But like you say, he didn't just let her go.
Yeah.
He said, go and sin no more.
Yeah.
He still dealt with the sin problem. Yeah. He wasn't tolerant of sin. Yeah. And in the case, both parties were in the wrong.
Yeah.
But really he answered them in a way to put it back on them and to convict them of their heart. And then they got out of the way, and then he helped her with hers. But so any more on gentleness? So back to Ephesians 4 again then. And the next one is patience. Okay, so with all humility, gentleness, and patience. And so the Greek word for patience means be patient or long-suffering. And so in Romans chapter 2, we have an example. And I think this is what we'll get to in a second here, but God's example is the example of patience that I think we need to understand here. And with that, God was patient with people, but eventually when they were rejected, God did deal with them too. But we have to understand, the first part is, how are we to be patient with the person first? And so in verse 4 of Romans chapter 2, please.
Or do you think lightly of the riches of his kindness and tolerance and patience, not knowing that the kindness of God leads you to repentance?
Okay, so Paul is kind of asking a question here. But what he's saying, he's in this question, is showing that God is patient. He had forbearance and patience, and the kindness that leads us to repentance. So if God wasn't patient, then nobody is going to be in heaven, because God wouldn't have the patience to allow them to be obedient. But since God is patient, he is giving people time to make the right decision. He's not just cutting them off when they make the wrong one. And you might say, well, it kind of looked like it in the Old Testament sometimes. Well, the difference is that God knows the heart and knew things that there's things that happen probably that are not written that God knew about. If you look at Eli's kids, for example, it does speak maybe a couple of chapter two or something, talking about Eli's sons and what they did and the wrong things that they did. And so you think, well, that's not very much stuff, but it is over a period of many years that they did this. And so it's not just a couple acts that they did. It was a character that they had. And that's why when God eventually killed them all, then that was why, because of their character. So we see a small part of it when God sees the whole picture of it. And so, but God is patient still, God is patient so that people will make the right decision. And whether right or wrong, whether they make the right decision or wrong decision, God is patient with them for a time being. And those who make the right decision eventually are rewarded. And those who make the wrong decision have no excuse, because God is patient with them. God is patient to allow them to give them a time to do what's right. And if they choose not to do that, they can't come and say, "Well, you never gave me a chance." God gave them a chance. God is patient. But so the example of patience is God is patient with us so that we repent. And that's an example of patience that we have. With discernment there, obviously, as well. The next one that kind of goes on this line is in 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 1. And Paul writing here, verse 16. So why don't you read that, please?
"Yet for this reason I found mercy, so that in me as the foremost, Jesus Christ might demonstrate his perfect patience as an example for those who would believe in him for eternal life."
Okay, so the patience of Jesus Christ is an example for us. For those who will, it says that is an example for those who would believe in him for eternal life. So he's an example for us to follow after. And Paul's situation was where that, "Yet for this reason I found mercy, in order that in me as a foremost Jesus Christ might demonstrate his perfect patience." Well, so Paul at the time, or prior to that, when he was still Saul, wasn't on the side of Christ, and we all kind of know that. But there was patience there that Jesus had. there's patience for Paul to make the right decision, even though he refers to himself as even the chief of sinners because he persecuted the church. You know, you can't get much more chief of sinners than that if you want to label them. I mean, lion's not even there. You know, drunkenness wouldn't even be. I mean, I know those things are bad things, but persecute. You know, it's not just you're doing something wrong. You're deliberately. I mean, and granted, when you sin, you're going against God. But while Paul was doing that there, he referenced himself as the chief of sinners because of that. But Christ had patience with him to make the right decision. And obviously, there had to be a little intervention there. I mean, and with everybody, I mean, there's some things that happen. But God was patient with him. God could have struck him down and stopped the persecution of the church pretty easily. But God was patient with him. And because God was patient with him, you see how the effect it had on not only Paul, but the church. Because it would have been one thing. I mean, God would have took care of the persecution if he would have just killed Paul. But since he didn't kill Paul and was patient with him, Paul became one of the great instrument for God. And so if we're using that as an example for us to be patient, you know, at the time it might be, you know, pretty horrible what that person's doing. And granted, we can't let, you know, again, it goes, there's still another way, or, you know, there's still common sense there too. And we're not just, you know, the church didn't just go and just be like, "Well, let's just be patient with them. You know, we're Christians, Paul," or when he was still Saul, and let him kill them all. But there still is a time for us that we need to understand it. It's possible patience with somebody might not only help them when they give them the chance, but they might be a person that's going to be really effective for Christ. In summary,
I think of Jacob and Job. Maybe Job's not exactly the perfect example, but also of course Paul, Saul. That journey that they went through, all three of them, and others I'm sure, was from what they once were to what God wanted them to be. And say, for instance, Saul, the grand inquisitor, basically for the Jewish church, tracked down and basically had a hand in the murder and torture of a great many Christians, right? And Christ came for him and then had had him walk in the shoes of those Christians. Mm. He was flogged and scourged and stoned and suffered all kinds of hardships, hunger, cold, heat. And he was indestructible because God had a journey for him, a purpose for him. He even got bit by a viper, didn't kill him. It's the kind of viper that kills people within minutes, right? Mm. That's God's journey for those people to transform them into something far greater. Mm. So he's given a taste of his own medicine, is what I call it. Just like Jacob got a taste of his own medicine. That, and sometimes how the Lord gets their attention and shapes them and forms them. That crucible you talked about, right? That silver until God sees his image in it. They got to suffer.
Yeah, and there's, excuse me, there was refining for them, and so when you look at, you can look, you know, you can, even though it doesn't look like it, maybe, you know, Abraham was probably one of those too, you know, had that, and you know, David was one. I mean, there was a, but God gave the patience for them to be able to do what's right, and God saw the heart and saw their true character in all of that, so that, you know, he gave them the patience, and he also gave those who didn't have good character time too, if you will, and they did what they did. And he didn't just kill every wicked king right away or kill every wicked person in Israel right away. He let them do what they did, and then they eventually got punished for it. But God was still patient in that, to, you know, because there was a greater outcome through that patience to give them the time to do what was right. The last one, if you turn back to Ephesians 4, is forbearance and love, and what, you know, that basically is a pretty, you know, good translation. The word for bearing, okay, and the word for forbearance really, it means to bear. And so it means to hold up or to bear with is what it means. And so you're bearing with one another in love. So with all humility, gentleness, patience, and bearing with one another in love. And so you don't bear with somebody if you're not humble, and if you're not patient, and if you're not gentle. Okay, and so in order to walk in a manner worthy of our calling, we're finishing this verse 2 out here, we're bearing with one another. We're having that patience. We're letting them, giving them time, and helping them and bearing with them. So turn over to Galatians chapter 2, just back one book. Galatians chapter 6, I'm sorry. Chapter 6. And kind of goes back a little bit to the beginning of the Matthew 18 passage we talked about. When someone sins, you go to that person first, and if you win him, you win your brother if he listens to you. So in Galatians 6, 1 and 2, please.
Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one loving, looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thus fulfill the law of Christ.
Okay, so kind of going there, is that we're with humility and gentleness and love, we're showing forbearance with one another in love. We're helping them. Hey, if they're in a trespass, you know, those who are spiritual, restore the person with gentleness. But bearing one another's burdens, we're helping them. The goal of it, and it you know, it kind of go back to you know, being a teammate, we'll say. It's kind of something we've dealt with here in baseball. You know, a good teammate helps the person get better. He doesn't put the person down so that he's better. So in the church, we help each other get better. We don't put the person down so that we're better. We're helping each other get better. And so we're bearing with one another's burdens. We're helping them in their mistakes, and we're doing that in gentleness. And granted, I mean, there is a time for the tough love and the discipline, but it's still done in gentleness. Turn over to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. A couple books after Ephesians there. Colossians chapter 3. Verse 12 and 13 of Colossians 3.
kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, you also should.
Okay, so kind of caps that off there well. In Colossians, what he's saying there is that kind of what we've been saying is that those of us who are chosen, basically those of us who are saints here, he's saying, those in the church, you know, put on the heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. But you're bearing with, you know, it's not something that we don't put someone down to get rid of them. We build someone up to help them and to help us. Because that's not the heart, that's not what Jesus did. Yeah, granted, there is time for discipline, but Jesus didn't tear people down to get rid of them. He opposed them when they were wrong. He didn't tear them down to get rid of them. He was there to help them. He's wanting to build them up. Okay? And granted, I mean, the Pharisees, I mean, that's a different, little different context, because they were opposing him, and he even said that their father was the devil, and so there was their heart was completely wrong, and they were enemies of Christ. And so it wasn't that he wasn't kind or gentle to them at a time. There was a time when there would need to be action taken, and he did that. And so, but we have to understand is that we need to use the example of Christ as the patience, you know, being patient with one another, being gentle, bearing with one another, building each other up, you know, helping each other. We rebuke when someone's wrong for the purpose of restoring them. That's the part of the rebuking. But for the purpose of restoring them. And so that's what he's saying here, is that forgiving one another, whoever has a complaint, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And so it's not something that we're not keeping tally, so to speak, on a personal level. Yeah, we stand up for what's wrong. We don't keep tally.
Yes, right.
What if your rebuke is in error?
What's that?
What if your rebuke is in error?
Well, and then that's the other person would rebuke. Yeah, yeah. So that's why everybody helps.
There's ways scripturally to take care of this that you spoke about.
Right. That's yeah. Right. That's what we. What's that?
Just my question.
Right. So, yeah, and so what we're doing is that we are bearing with one another. You know, our purpose is to help one another. Is to help someone in the trespass. It's not to push them down. It's to help them in the trespass. And that's kind of what. So back to Ephesians 4 then, when we're walking in a manner worthy of our calling, that word with there, again, I'll go back to that word that I mentioned before, that means with or among or after. You know, so we are not going to walk in a manner worthy of our calling if humility or gentleness or patience or bearing with one another in love is absent. We have to have those to walk in a manner worthy of our calling. And we have to, our purpose is to help each other out. And it doesn't just stop at the church. I mean, there's people that are lost that need our help. And we have to, these principles still apply, even though it's written to the church here, these principles still apply to how we handle the lost too. I mean, within reason, a little bit there. I mean, we're not just going to sit there and, like I said before, well, come persecute us, well, we'll just be patient with you. I mean, that's not how that's handled. But we need to be gentle, and we need to be patient and allow people to make the conclusion and give them the opportunity and do it in the correct way. Any comments then on Ephesians 4, verse 2? Okay, well, we'll stop there this week, and we'll pick up again in verse 3 next week.